The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martello. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. And as we've done frequently in the past months, today's show is going to be focusing on climate change. And we're going to be talking to the Executive Director of Scenic Hudson, which is really one of the foundational organizations in the modern environmental movement. And we are so fortunate to have them right in our backyard. But before I introduce our guest, I always like to give some quick facts just to give listeners by no means are these comprehensive, but just some quick facts to demonstrate the scope and severity of the climate change challenge. So the Institute for European Environmental Policy reported that more than half of all CO2 emissions since 1751 were emitted in the last 30 years. Slightly over half of all cumulative global CO2 emissions have taken place since 1990. The last 7 years have been the hottest on record on planet Earth. And the target goal of keeping global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels, and that's the point at which catastrophic climate change impacts accelerate, is not being met. We are already at 1.1 degrees, and even if the Paris Climate Accord goals are met, and doesn't look like they will be, we are on track to reach 2.7 degrees by the end of the century. But as I said at the beginning of the show, fortunately, we have organizations such as Scenic Hudson right here in our backyard that really set the stage for the modern environmental movement. And they're doing just such amazing work. And you're going to hear all about it with our guest, Seth McGee, Executive Director of the Scenic Hudson Land Trust and Land Programs. Seth leads Scenic Hudson's efforts to conserve land, create new parks and preserves, and help the Hudson Valley cities protect and enhance their land assets, local history, and culture in an inclusive and equitable way. He joined Scenic Hudson in 1991 as land projects manager, became director of land conservation in 2007, and has been serving as executive director of the Scenic Hudson Land Trust and Land Programs since 2021. Seth, in the past, has worked for the Nature Conservancy's North Carolina chapter, the Peace Corps, and he was an advisory board member of the Land Trust Alliance's New York program, and served on the board of directors of the New York New Jersey Trail Conference, and as co-chair of the Town of New Paltz Open Space Protection Commission. So, Seth, welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. It's really wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you, Vin. Appreciate it. It's great to be here.
So, Seth, before we dig into some of the specific initiatives and efforts of Scenic Hudson with respect to climate change, can you give us a brief history of the organization, how and why it got started, and what some of the key priority areas are?
Absolutely. So, Scenic Hudson, we are the largest environmental organization focused on the Hudson River Valley. We got our start back in 1963. When there was a hydroelectric proposal for Storm King Mountain, which would have really defaced that incredible natural area along the Hudson, that iconic granite dome on the Hudson, down the Hudson Highlands. And it would have sucked millions of gallons a day of water and fish out of the Hudson, really damaging the ecology there. And so in 1963, which you got to remember was before really the environmental movement, is before the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, before SEACER or anything, there were really not much in the way of environmental regulations. That's when Scenic Hudson got its start. So our roots are really in both environmental advocacy and land conservation. So what we do is we conserve land and farms and create parks that connect people with the Hudson River and natural areas in the valley while fighting threats to the river and natural resources that are really the foundation of our well-being here in the valley. We've conserved over 48,000 acres of land in 10 different counties and created more than 40 public parks that connect people to nature, many of them in Ulster County, such as Black Creek Preserve, the Esopus Meadows Preserve, Shopanique Ridge, all in the town of Esopus, Falling Waters Preserve up in Saugerties in Glasgow, and Franny Reese State Park, which we conserved and still manage in the town of Lloyd. We've conserved nearly 20,000 acres of working farmland on 135 family farms. Those are conserved with permanent conservation restrictions. So the land remains privately owned, but it contributing to the local food supply. And we advocate for sound environmental policies, decisions, and funding. We advocate for local land use decisions that are protective of the Hudson River and the natural character of our communities, and also that connect people to nature. And we've begun working in our river cities of Kingston, Poughkeepsie, and Newburgh on environmental justice issues there, and linking people to both healthy food supply and natural areas. Close to home, we conserved a 500-acre former mine in Kingston, the former Tilcon mine in Kingston, the city of Kingston, the town of Ulster, 2 years ago. And this is the property that the Hudson River Brickyard Trail runs through, which opened late last year. And this property, we're working with New York State to turn it into a future state park. And we also partnered on much smaller, so that's at the large scale, 500 acres. We also partnered several years ago with the Kingston Land Trust and the group, the African-American cultural group Harambe in Kingston, to save the Pine Street African burial ground. So we work at many scales. We advocate in Albany, we advocate in DC. And right now, our two main priorities are addressing climate change, the threats of climate change here in the Hudson Valley, and also environmental justice.
Can you elaborate on, since this the main topic here is climate change, can you talk to us about how Scenic Hudson sees its role, rather, in helping our region adapt to a changing climate?
Absolutely. And climate change, I think there's an understandable reaction people have. They say, well, this is a global issue. What can we do at the local level? Well, there's a lot we can do at the local level. And some of it is kind of creating replicable models for it that can be adopted elsewhere. There's two ways to address climate change. There's adaptation and mitigation. And Scenic Hudson is focused on both. Adaptation is really focusing on how we acclimatize our communities and our ecological systems to the reality of climate change. How do we adapt and survive it? Mitigation is how do we work to roll back or slow climate change? So we're doing both. On the adaptation side, it's really about fostering resilience, both at the natural level and at the community level. And we have a climate resilience strategy that seeks to conserve a network of landscapes that will allow for species to move around and critters and plant life to adapt and move around in the landscape in response to the stresses of climate change. So, for example, we're seeing species move north to cooler climes. We see species moving out of the away from rising waters, such as the Hudson River as an arm of the sea, as a tidal estuary, is subject to sea level rise. The emphasis is really on creating connected corridors in this work. So we have a whole prioritization scheme that looks at land across 10 counties and says, how do we build and safeguard the most resilient network of lands to allow for the ecology to survive and thrive? We're also working to implement the Biden administration's vision for conserving 30%, they call it 30 by 30, and the vision is to conserve 30% of America's remaining open lands by 2030. And this is a key part of the Biden administration's climate resilience strategy, is to safeguard those open lands and the ecological services that they provide. So we're working on a Hudson Valley version of this very 30 by 30. Mm-hmm. We also work to conserve lands that are vulnerable to sea level rise. For example, up in Albany County, we have conserved hundreds of acres of tidal wetlands and farm fields right along the river that are projected to be inundated by the Hudson by the end of the century. And this is really key for adaptation, because if every land that's vulnerable to sea level rise were developed for private development, there's going to be enormous pressure on government and insurance companies, et cetera, to protect those lands as they're inundated and effectively armor plate the Hudson River shoreline. So we want to help the region to adapt to climate change. We think that some of these areas could create, kind of adapt into waterfowl habitat areas as they get inundated. And we'd like to see that sort of thing happen. So over the past 100 years, the Hudson River has risen about a foot. And this is greater than the global average. The Hudson will rise with the oceans. And the best data available indicates a projected rise of 6 feet or more by the end of this century. So if think about your favorite place on the Hudson and imagine it, the river 6 feet higher than it is today. And this is all based on, polar ice cap melting and such that, so it's a local manifestation of a global issue. So what's at stake? Yeah. You've got 9,000 acres of riverfront land, critical habitats. You've got 3,600 households and about 7,000 people. You've got the Metro North Railroad. I mean, these are all threatened areas, as well as a lot of tidal wetlands that could be submerged. So we've created a sea level rise mapper to help communities to plan for that sea level rise. We've also brought in, and you can go to our website and see that sea level rise mapper. We work with partners like the Hudson River Estuary Program to create a flood resilience network to bring communities together to help plan for plan strategies for addressing sea level rise. And we also...
We're just running out of time in our first segment of our show, but we'll pick it up after this very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio.
Heart attacks won't wait. If you ever have symptoms of a heart attack, you need to get to the nearest emergency department, preferably one with the technology and expertise to stop a heart attack in its tracks. Health Alliance Hospital, right here on Broadway in Kingston, has expanded cardiac services, including catheterization and electrophysiology. Now, for many people, Health Alliance in Kingston is the closest option to find treatment of clogged arteries, irregular heartbeats, and to limit damage from a heart attack already in process. For the first time, we have these advanced heart health services based right here in Ulster County. This expansion is part of a larger plan to bring advanced cardiac services to Ulster County and the surrounding communities. If you have heart attack symptoms, do not wait. Call 911 and get to the closest emergency department. At Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston, we are ready to see you now. That's Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston. WMC Health, advancing care here.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. And today, we're discussing climate change with Seth McGee, who is Executive Director of Scenic Hudson. Seth, before the break, you were elaborating on Scenic Hudson's adaptation strategies and we ran out of time in the first segment. So would you like to continue on with that and then talk to us about mitigation strategies?
Sure. So one other adaptation strategy I want to highlight is we're working to create climate smart parks, as we call them, which involves constructing shade structures in our parks in areas that are going to be hot, where people are going to be seeking cool places, access to water. And so building shade structures for people to gather is going to be increasingly important, as well as innovative stormwater management to deal with, intense storms and things like that we're experiencing as a result of climate change. We're also working to help farmers with climate resilient agriculture, trying to help them withstand the stresses of climate change, like drought, floods, severe storms, et cetera. But pivoting to mitigation, it really, that's where the rubber hits the road on helping to slow down or roll back climate change. And its twin strategies are carbon sequestration, or storing carbon in the ground, and the rapid adoption of renewable energy and ending the use of fossil fuels. So on carbon sequestration, our work to advance the 30 by 30 initiative that I mentioned directly addresses this. Protecting forests in the Hudson Valley keeps carbon in the ground and in the trees, and forests pull carbon out of the atmosphere. And promoting regenerative farming techniques that preserve carbon in the soil also help. It's estimated that forestry and agriculture can contribute up to one third of the carbon sequestration needed to mitigate climate change. But in order to do this, we need to ensure that we have healthy forests and healthy farms. On the forest side, we're focusing on ensuring that our Hudson Valley forests can regenerate. you know, they're really decimated by deer browse and other things that, you know, invasives, et cetera. So we're focusing on that and assessing how much carbon is stored or sequestered in the lands, in the forest lands that we conserve, and starting to prioritize those lands that we think will store the most carbon. On farmland, the climate resilient work that I mentioned is also key for mitigation. In addition to helping farms be more resilient and profitable in the face of climate change, it's also about finding financial incentives for farmers to adopt practices that sequester carbon. There's this phrase carbon farming that's become, you know, a lot of interest in that. There's been documentaries about it, et cetera. John Bauermaster did a documentary recently about carbon farming. So it involves practices like planting of cover crops between cycles of cash crops, reducing the tilling of soil, which releases a lot of carbon into the atmosphere. And at the policy level, it includes our work. We developed a consortium called the Northeast Carbon Alliance, which is a consortium of policymakers, academics, and practitioners across the Northeast. And we think it has great potential for influencing federal, well, agricultural policy in the Northeast and federally. And we're especially focused on the upcoming renewal of the federal farm bill, which happens every 4 years. And the goal is really to bring financial incentives to the table for farmers to help them adopt these resilient practices. An example in Albany is the Soil Health and Climate Resiliency Act, which we championed, which has passed both houses of the legislature and awaits the governor's signature, hopefully. And this will really update our soil and water districts, that conservation districts, that to help them to add an additional focus on soil health and carbon sequestration. We're also going to be working on some demonstration projects in our region with farmers to promote these practices. And we're looking to work in partnership with groups like Cornell on that.
Just out of curiosity, is there a mathematical or statistical formula that's utilized to measure, how much carbon is sequestered by, say, an acre of forest land or optimal farming practices? And are you able to then translate that to a dollar value that's assigned to that, to say, you know, if we do this, we are saving X amount of money in terms of, you know, future damages or even, you know, and so on and so forth. So are you able, I guess my question is, are you able to add quantifiable data to that?
There's a lot of data. A lot of groups have been working on quantifying exactly as you're describing, Vin. You know, in the private sector, there are companies that will sell carbon credits to, you know, private companies that are looking to decrease their carbon footprint will purchase carbon credits by protecting forests and things like that. And there are companies that have created those exact mathematical formulas that can quantify the financial value, and then companies will pay for that. It's a growing science, and I think we're going to see more changes over time as we really begin to quantify in a very pretty precise way, both for farm soils and also for forests. But it is very quantifiable. It's a little beyond sort of the resources of many conservation groups, but it's increasingly groups like the Nature Conservancy and are working to do those kind of questions.
Well, I'm always interested in how the business and investment community has responded to climate change, not only in terms of, you know, new opportunities in terms of renewables and technology and so on and so forth, but also, you know, the investment community seems to have responded in a big way to investor demand. I was talking with a person from Morgan Stanley who is a sustainability officer there, and she was saying how people used to add renewables or what have you to their portfolios as a feel-good measure, but now it's a multi-trillion-dollar business and investors are clamoring to get on board. So it's always interesting when, you know, in the past, in the early days of the environmental movement, there was a dichotomy between, you know, environment and business, but I think the two are beginning to come together in unprecedented ways.
Yeah, I would agree, Vin. I think the divestment movement has really fueled a lot of this. There's been enormous pressure on institutions to divest from fossil fuels. And so that has created you know, its own market signal. But then, as you said, you know, there are many companies that want to be, they believe that investing in renewables and pulling out of fossil fuels is going to make good investment sense. You know, insurance companies are starting to, and the reinsurance industry are starting to ask, you know, is it sustainable for us to be insuring properties in these coastal areas that are going to be inundated? So there's market signals happening that will be beneficial. That's just one piece of the pie. I mean, I think, you know, the private sector needs to respond, as does government, and activism on at all levels needs to continue to keep the pressure up.
Well, that just segues into my next question, Seth. Just today, I read in the New York Times an article about the plan for young people from around Europe and the world to demonstrate at the COP26 International Climate Conference in Glasgow. And one after another young person who was interviewed for the article said that world leaders are talking the talk, but not really, really doing nearly enough to prevent and mitigate climate change. So I'm just curious, as an environmental leader, are you optimistic about where we're headed? What's your view on this, and how can we collectively do more to stop and reverse climate change in our individual lives and in our communities?
Great question, Vin. I'm optimistic in the long term, but I'm less optimistic in the short term. Clearly, what we've done, this is the 26th, you know, climate global conference, and there's been lots of great words said over the decades. But it's clearly not enough. You know, things keep getting worse. We need bolder action on fossil fuels. We need bolder action to have a immediate ramp up of the use of renewables. But what's changed, what makes me more optimistic, is that the immediacy of the issue. I think at most of these climate gatherings in the past, climate change has been generally seen as something that's out there in the future that we have to address. And other than, you know, the island nations, the low-lying island nations of the Pacific have been sounding the alarm on this for 20 years, but the rest of the world wasn't really listening. Now, with all of the catastrophes that have happened, you know, the wildfires in California, flooding around the globe that has resulted in a lot of death and displacement, both here in the U.S. and in India and elsewhere, it's become impossible for governments to ignore what's happening. So they're starting to step up. These pledges are good, but it's clearly not enough. I'm encouraged by some of the moves on methane, trying to reduce the amount of methane in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we still need significantly more divestment from fossil fuels and embrace of renewables. So we kind of need all of this. We need the activists and the youth putting pressure globally, as they're doing magnificently. But we also need the private sector to continue to step up, like you said, like you described. And we need governments to take this seriously.
Absolutely. Really, everyone.
All of the above, right? Strategy, really.
Yeah. I mean, every sector, you know, in all of our public health crises that we deal with, we always talk about the fact when something becomes a public health crisis, it by default means that everyone has a role to play in the solution. So on that note, if people want to learn more about anything we've discussed today or about Seneca Hudson and want to get involved by perhaps volunteering or donating, how do they do that, Seth?
Well, I would encourage people to go to our website, senechudson.org. And on that website, you'll see a variety of tabs that you can click on, and it'll bring you to ways to volunteer and ways you can donate, and also just to learn about our work at a deeper level. We have a lot of reports and such on the website as well that people may be interested in on renewables. We have a toolkit for helping communities to adopt solar. Lots of resources there on our website at senechudson.org.
Wonderful, Seth. Well, you know, we are so grateful and so lucky to have an organization of the caliber of Seneca Hudson right here in our region. And we are grateful to you and your colleagues, to you for your leadership and your colleagues for everything that you do to protect and enhance our environment. So thank you so much. And we hope to have you back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Tune in next week for more great information you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.